Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Shoots it, deflected right in. Pietrangelo save, rebound. Stastny stopped by Pietrangelo. I don't believe that save. Neither does Peter Stastny. He can't believe the save that Pietrangelo just made on him as Frankie sparkling on that maneuver there to stop and rob Peter Stastny. He should get 5-10 for that.
Hello and welcome to episode 118 of Tendy Talk, presented by the Hockey Podcast Network and the BLPA Podcast Networks. I'm your host, Joe, better known as Wash Up Goalie on social media. This week, I chat with GGSU admin, a Florida resident, and a fun guy to talk to, Luis Molina. So, without further ado, let's get to the conversation with Luis. Well, Luis, thanks for joining me on the podcast. It's fun to get to talk to you. I would say been Facebook stalking you for quite some time as a member of the GGSU group.
Yeah.
You know, you're all over that. I'm sure you've seen some of my posts here and there. So it's good to actually, you know, make the connection.
Yeah, no, it's good to be on here. I love talking anything goalie. So
yeah, exactly. It's everybody I've had on the podcast. It's just, you know, at the end of the day, it's two goalies talking to each other. It doesn't matter what age, skill level. In fact, one of my most recent episodes was with Grant Fuhr, and it was just like we were two teammates sitting in the locker room talking about our favorite thing.
That's the thing about goaltending. You can walk up to any other goalie and you automatically have that built-in like commonality to talk about stuff, and it's just easy.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, since I recently moved down to Georgia, and one of my teammates on the beer league team I found plays on another team, and he's a goalie on the other team. So it's just kind of funny on how he and I have gravitated toward each other. And, you know, whenever we get in the locker room, it just so happens we're usually sitting next to each other and usually the ones talking to each other.
Yep.
So I'm going to start out the way I do with every goalie on the podcast. I wasn't able to find too much on your Facebook page to answer these questions, but, you know, where did you grow up and how did you, you know, gravitate towards hockey? Because it looks like you're from Florida. That's my guess, but I don't want to assume.
Yeah, I was born and raised in South Florida. I'm still living there now. So, yeah, off the bat, there was no hockey down here. I mean, I was born in 1982, and the Panthers didn't come around until 93.
Yeah.
So, first 11 years of my life, had no exposure to hockey whatsoever. I mean, I knew of it loosely as a sport, but I wasn't into it because it just down here, there wasn't anything, you know? The first sport I was really into was basketball, just because it's so easy. You put a hoop up in the driveway, you start playing basketball, whatever. You know, football I like too. And then, you know, it's the whole thing with expansion in the NHL. And, you know, some people kind of poo-poo putting a NHL team in a non-traditional markets like down here, Arizona, whatever. But, I mean, it works. I'm living proof it works, because if it wasn't for the Panthers, I probably still wouldn't be into hockey right now. And because of the Panthers, I'm obsessed with it. You know, I've had built a lot of relationships through playing hockey that I would never have otherwise. And it's just opened up a lot of opportunities for me. And it's like, it's crazy for me to think if I never would have got into hockey, like my life would be now. And it's not even that like I played pro or anything like that, but it's just been such a huge influence on my life. So when the Panthers started in 93, you know, then you kind of like start checking it out, like, oh, what's this, you know, hockey, whatever. You start getting a little more interested, and, you know, it helped that they were pretty competitive even from the get-go. And then they had that Cinderella run in 96, and that really just got me hooked. And then, you know, back then in the 90s, I would say the 90s was probably the heyday of like inline hockey, and especially like down here. And I know in California, it was pretty big too. So that's really when I started playing. I got into the inline hockey first and foremost. You know, my friends, again, when the Panthers started, we would kind of just maybe go out in the street, play a little street roller hockey, whatever.
Thanks to Wayne's World, game off.
Yeah. Had like, I think the net was like a laundry basket or whatever, you know. And then it got a little, I got a little more serious since the inline. My school ended up having a team, my high school. I played for some travel teams. I played for one of Bauer's own travel teams at one point for inline. So I got really into the inline thing, really competitive in that. And then in 99, 2000, my senior year of high school, I decided to try to switch over to ice because we actually started getting more ice rinks. That became a little more prominent down here. And then I really haven't looked back from ice to once I made the switch to ice. I was like, yeah, it's a lot easier to slide around and do things on ice. I never wanted to go back to roller after that. And then like the heat, especially down here in Florida with the outdoor rinks and roller. So once I made the switch to ice, I really never looked back to roller. But yeah, then so my senior year of high school, I switched to ice hockey. And then I went to college at FSU, Florida State University, and they had a club team, ice club team. So I played for them there, 4 years there playing for them. And then after that, it's, you know, pretty much just been beer league kind of stuff with also a couple cool experiences I've been able to do mixed in playing with the Panthers and doing some stuff with them. I don't know if you want me to get into that now or you want to wait for another point.
Because one thing I want to hop on is, you know, you mentioned we're basically the same age. I mean, you're older than you, but you know, when we grew up, like you said, basketball was king. You know, you had Magic Johnson and Larry Bird, and then you had the passing the torch of, you know, the Bulls' first run when it was Jordan versus Magic. And I mean, it was back when basketball was basketball. I mean, the shorts were short and it wasn't dunking, and it was hard not to be a basketball fan. And I grew up in Chicago, and during the Jordan era, I'm like, how am I not a basketball fan growing up? Like, I tried, but, you know, of course, we had the Blackhawks, and, you know, they were doing well at the time with Belfour and Roenick and Larmer and all those guys. And it was like, well, yeah, of course I was going to gravitate towards hockey. It's a better sport. Now, you mentioned playing club hockey at FSU. I wish I would have known more about club hockey when I was making my decision to go to school, because it may have changed things. I'm glad I didn't, because I love how things turned out, and I got to play college hockey still. But I maybe would have gone to a different school, or who knows. But what I've learned since moving from Minnesota to Georgia is it's not just ACHA hockey. There's a lot more. Georgia Tech down here plays, I think, I forget what they're in, but then we have Georgia. They're in a different league. And so I guess my question is, what league was FSU in at the time? Was it ACHA?
My understanding is, because I'm still involved with, we have like an alumni group, and like we try to do things to help out the current team. And we also just do our own things with our own skates and tournaments and stuff. But my understanding, I mean, you know, it's been 20 years.
Much has changed.
Right. Yeah. No, a lot has changed. So it's, the name of the league and the conference or whatever they're in has changed several times since I've been there. So I know it's different. I couldn't tell you exactly what it is now from there. It was ACHA when I played there. Okay. Now, again, I think it's something different now, but we did play Georgia Tech. We played Georgia, you know, the teams in Florida, like Vanderbilt. I think around like the furthest we really traveled, because we had to just travel around in a bus. I think the first we traveled like around like the Tennessee was about as far north as we went. And then, like I said, mostly Florida, Georgia, Tennessee teams around there is what we mainly played when I was there.
I believe Tech is now in AAU. as Georgia, I believe. So, and I think they play FSU, so they're probably all in that. But it's, I'm learning there, it's not just ACHA for club hockey. There's like three or four different, I guess you could say almost organizations that they all fall under.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's definitely growing. Yeah, it's definitely grown. There's a lot more teams now than when I was playing. So I guess that's why they've had to like kind of make different conferences or different more divisions with all the new teams that have sprung up too. And yeah, there's some teams definitely like moving up into, you know, higher level, not maybe not Division One NCAA, but I think, I don't know, maybe in another 20 years or so, we might have a team in like Southeast area of the U.S. that
It's going to happen. I mean, yeah. Alabama Huntsville, you know, they had the D1 team. I know Illinois is trying to go D1. They're trying to follow the Penn State model, you know, having the club hockey. But I'm almost glad that I didn't know all about that stuff when I chose. And it was just, oh, there's only NCAA Division One or Division Three. It was simple.
Yeah.
I went Division Three and played JV for 4 years. One of my buddies said I had the fastest door in the MIAC, and I'm like, darn right I did. Like, I knew my role. I was going to be the best at it. But back then, club hockey, at least the Northern club hockey teams, I remember me and one of my high school teammates went to the same school, and we were on the team, and we had a couple teammates that were playing club hockey down in Illinois, and we'd go back for alumni games, and they're just, oh, you know, we're a Division I school, we're better. And we're like, but we're Division – yeah, we're Division Three, but we're NCAA hockey, not club hockey. Mm-hmm. And we're like, you guys have to pay to play. We don't. And they're like, oh, that doesn't mean anything. It's like, well, it does, because it's a lot cheaper for us, you know. Yeah. Like, and we're skating 6 days a week at prime times, not, you know, three or four times a week at 10 o'clock. And they're like, well. And we're trying to get our coach to schedule some games with them, because we're like, they'll come up and play. And my coach is like, it's not worth our time. And I was like, well, what do you mean? He's like, because I play in the Minnesota Intercollegiate Athletic Conference, the MIAC, and not every team had a JV team. So to round out our schedule, we would schedule some junior B teams in the area more for recruiting purposes. And my coach is like, you know those junior B games where we just smoke them? And we're like, yeah. He's like, yeah, those games we work on our power play? Yeah. And he's like, it would be worse than that. And we're like, oh, you know, so back then, 20 plus years ago, I hate that I have to say plus now, but that gap was so much bigger. But now there are club teams that could compete with the best D3 teams in the nation. I'm positive of it. And, you know, I know some have Adrian College. I forget where they're at, somewhere in Michigan, I think, but they have a club D1, club D2, club D3, and a D3 team. You know, they got four different levels. And talking to some of those guys, they're like, yeah, there's some of those games between the different teams get pretty feisty, because that gap is so close now. It's a whole different ball game. And I'm 100% on board with John Butchergrass when he says club hockey is college hockey, because these days it is. It's not the old days where, you know, I know some clubs, it was, oh, you can pay the fee. We don't care if you can skate, but you can pay the fee. Right. You know, that was it. You know, at some of the smaller schools, I know not at the big ones, but, at those schools that was the philosophy for years. That's not the case anymore. You get kids committing to club teams.
Yeah, no, I know there are some of the schools in Florida and like Georgia that's somewhat recruit almost, you know, to try to get kids to come there.
Yeah.
Oh, so, yeah. And just, I mean, it's just how much everything's grown. Like I said, with the expansion and everything, you have so many, such a larger pool of good players. Mm-hmm. And that's why they need someplace to go. And that's why you have club teams becoming better and so on.
So I want to shift gears a little bit. And you talk about, you know, expansion to the South, and it works. And I bring that up because, as I mentioned, I recently moved down to Georgia, and they're trying to get a team for a third time. I'm hoping they do, because it'll be 4 miles from my house. It'll help property values, and B, I can take an Uber a lot cheaper to the game than pay for parking. So I'm all for it. But you know, what are your thoughts on more teams in the South? Cause I know they're looking at Houston. They're looking at some other Southern cities. And, you know, what did you see, you know, just the expansion. Like you said, there weren't rinks when you were a kid. Now there's rinks. The fan base, you know, how did you see firsthand that explosion? And then kids today, you know, their experience compared to yours?
Well, you know, and especially with South Florida, it's a very bandwagon sports fan town. So I think the fact that they were competitive pretty early on and that, you know, Cinderella run in 96 really did a lot for it. And that's the thing. I mean, yes, you'll have a grace period as an expansion team to not be that good, maybe, but you have to put a good product on the ice or people are not going to come. That's just the facts. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, there was like a 10 year stretch from like the early 2000s to like 2011 where the Panthers never made the playoffs. They were like horrible every year. And that's when really all like the things you hear people make fun of the Panthers and empty arena, it comes from that like decade of time where we were just terrible. But like, you can't,
any team's that bad,
yeah,
they're gonna get,
you can't put garbage on the ice, you know, yeah, especially in a non-traditional market, you can't put garbage on the ice and expect people to come. Look now, I mean, maybe not sold out every game, but it's pretty well packed the games out because we've been doing good. We had the run last season, we've been going to the playoffs, what, 4 years in a row or something like that now. So, I mean, that's first and foremost, you got to put at least a competitive product on the ice. You can't just throw anything and be like, oh, and then complain, nobody's coming to see our games. Like, I'm sorry, you got to give us something to cheer for. So, yeah. I mean, that was part of it. They were pretty successful right off the bat. And then the first arena they played in was the old Miami Arena, which is where the Miami Heat played at the time, too. That's since been demolished. It's not there anymore. But it was already an established area for people to go and go to a sporting event or whatever. That's another thing too. I think they have to get right with these expansion teams is like where they're putting the arena. And I think that's a lot of where Arizona's having problems, mm-hmm. Is the arena is not an ideal place. And to be honest, the current arena that the Panthers are in, they built it around 2098, around there. When they built it, it was not in a good area at the time because it hadn't been developed that much around there. It was kind of like out almost in the Everglades in the middle of nowhere. And it's like, so you were bad for a decade. You have the arena in the middle of the Everglades where no one cares to go. But now they've built out that area a little more. I mean, I think people have just gotten used to, okay, that's where it is, whatever. They've gotten better, all that stuff. So, you know, things are improving with the Panthers in that sense. But that does make a difference that, you know, you have your arena in a place that people want to go to and not just out in the middle of nowhere. You know?
Get to, because that's the problem in Tampa Bay. It's like, yeah. It's a great arena when you're there, but getting there is half the problem.
Yeah. So, and you know, you're saying how you guys are trying to get another team again in the Georgia area. You know, I don't know what they've been talking about, where they want to put them or where they're going to play. But I think, I remember hearing like that. I think that was also, wasn't a problem with like the location of it when they had the Thrashers.
Yeah. So I've talked to quite a few people, and the Athletic had a great article about why hockey a third time in Georgia makes sense. The first time in the late 70s, early 80s, it was too soon for the South. It didn't make sense back then, especially in a basketball market. So they lost the Flames, which is bad because they lost the best name for a hockey team down here. you know, anybody that's a fan of history understands the name of Sherman's March to the Sea. She burned everything down, including the whole city of Atlanta. And then the second time, it was the location. They were playing where the Hawks play, which is downtown Atlanta. I don't know what kind of neighborhood it is. I haven't been there yet. I don't know. But everybody I talked to is like, well, Atlanta traffic sucks. And if you got a game on a Tuesday night, you got to leave work at noon to get there and hope you get there on time. Because in what I've learned, the traffic, it's not that drivers are bad down here. They're not great, but they're not bad. It's the fact that they'll have three interstates come together all at one spot. And then it's like, oh, I'm on the far left lane. I got to get over at times 12 to 13 lanes in a half mile. And it's like trying to get, that's where the issue comes in the traffic down here. But where they want to put it now is in the north suburbs. It's in South Forsyth County, just right on the Forsyth Fulton County line. And everybody's going, well, they should put it in Fulton County out near Cobb where the Braves' new ballpark is. Because they're like, oh, they do great out there. It's easy to get to. It's like, what the people who are trying to bring the team here, what they did is they looked at the season ticket holders of the Thrashers and saw where they were living. And the majority of them were in this you know, Highway 400 corridor. And they're like, well, if that's where most of the season ticket holders live, and to get somewhat, you know, talking about economics and everything else, that's where most of the money is in Georgia, mm-hmm. in Atlanta, is in the northern suburbs. So they're like, that's where the season ticket holders were. That's where the money is. And on top of that, there's 7 sheets of ice in the Atlanta area right now, at least 7 that I know of. They're all, 6 of those 7 are within a half hour of where this rink would be. The other one is 45 minutes away. So it's like, that's where the hockey's being played. So why would they put it downtown or on the south side of town?
Mm-hmm.
It you know, to your point, it's location matters. And if they put it in a good spot, I think it's a great spot. Just talking to the different hockey people I've been around the last 8 months. Yeah, Highway 400's not fun to drive on a Tuesday after work, but they're already working on improving it to make it a little bit better in the event that they do get the team. And they want to, the development isn't just an arena. It includes hotels, shops, restaurants, you know, so it's, they've got a plan that I think works. They've seen the model after Vegas and Seattle and even some of the other teams. They've seen what doesn't work. So I don't see why it wouldn't thrive. Some people point to the ECHL team in town, the Gladiators, but they're not very good this year. And I feel bad saying that because I'm trying to get the Gladiator goalie on the podcast. I've been talks with their PR team, but their record shows it, that they haven't been very good. But Georgia Tech, they play at the same rink I do. It's a good 45 minutes from campus, and they're getting, you know, a couple hundred students a night to their mm-hmm. games. Georgia, they're getting people showing up to their games. I haven't been to any of their games, but one of the coaches is on my beer league team, so I hear all about it. So, you know, they're getting, and they just had a tournament down in Savannah where I don't think FSU was there. The Gators were there. It was the Gators, Tech, Georgia, and I forget who the fourth one was. And they had solid attendance there. So it's like, the hockey fans are here. They just need a team. And the other thing I heard about the Thrashers is, yeah, it was in a bad location, but they had the fans. It was poor ownership. And that's why they wound up leaving. Because rather than one, you know, strong majority owner, it was a corporate ownership where nobody really cared. It was all about the bottom line. And so mm-hmm. that's really why they lost them, from everything I've learned in 8 months. mm-hmm. So, you know, you start playing hockey, primarily roller hockey. What drew you to the net? I'm sure John Van Beesbrouck in his amazing mask and, yeah. you know, just the way he played had to play a small role in it. But what was it that brought, you know, pulled you between the pipes?
So that, and then also the classic thing of like, I was one of the last of my group of friends to start getting into it. And so they needed someone to play goal because none of them did. So they stuck me in goal.
Yeah.
So that, and then, yeah, I mean, how can you not think goaltending is cool? You see somebody like John Van Beesbrouck with those pads, the mask and everything. It's like, I mean, now not so much. I think a lot of the equipment's gotten a little more boring, but like, especially back in the 90s, there was some awesome setups. Like, how does a kid not see that and just get into it, you know?
Yeah. Well, when I got my last set of pads, you know, I hadn't bought a new set since 99. So I'm like, I don't like any of the new graphics. And I worked with Ev over at Vaughn and got the old, you know, the same graphic I had on my old legacies, you know, the bullseye is like,
yeah.
But back then the goalies all had style, you mm-hmm. know, even if they were wearing the same pad, they, you know, it wasn't just the plain all white with a little bit of color. Like they were going all out with their designs, and it I don't even know if it was intentional. They're like, yeah, this just looks cool. Let's run with it. And the other thing I liked about the goalies of that era is for the most part, they had a mask and they stuck with it. Yeah. You know, Cujo is a great example, you know, in that he stuck with that mask across teams. Belfour stuck with that mask across teams. Yeah, Potvin. But even Van Beesbrouck, when he changed teams, he got a mask, and that was the mask for that team. He wasn't changing it up every year. Mm-hmm. It was just one of those things. Like, yeah, there's my goalie. It's not, there's my goalie. What's he wearing today?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no, they were, I would almost liken them to like almost like WWF wrestlers back in the day, where they just had their own look and identity. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you knew who they were. Like, it's just, they were their own character almost. And now it's not so much that, but.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you bring up wrestling. I'm old enough to remember the WWF Saturday morning cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, just Macho Man, you saw that cowboy hat, you just the silhouette, you knew it was Macho Man. You saw the just the face paint of Sting, or you know, the tassels out, you knew it was Sting. Yep. Hulk Hogan, you know, these guys you knew, where I haven't watched wrestling in years, but it's almost like you turn it on, it's like they all look alike. That, you know, so you bring up a good point. There was just style in the 90s, although there's some style of the 90s that just never needs to come back to. And I almost point to, you know, some of the basketball uniforms of the 90s. It's like, God, thank God we only see them once or twice a year in a throwback game. Like those old Pistons jerseys and the Rockets jerseys are like, oh my God, they're terrible. So, you know, you wind up in the net because, you know, you're one of the last ones to pull to start. And they're like, all right, there you go. But now you're in the beer leagues like the rest of us, as KVG says, all roads lead to the beer leagues. Yeah. But part of that, you know, you're part of kind of two groups every goalie I know is aware of and usually follow. And the first one's the GGSU. How did you get started with that group and rise to the top of the ranks, shall we say?
So if you remember the old goalie store bulletin board,
GSUB, yes.
So that's probably the first online forum I really got into. And that was pretty big back in the day. I mean, that was before Facebook came out. We had that forum there. And then
the goalie book, we'll call it.
Yeah. And I was on that until the bitter end, until just one day we all went to log in and it just wasn't there anymore. And I had kind of heard about GGSU in passing on there, but like a lot of people were like, oh, they're a bunch of jerks over there, whatever, blah, blah, blah. So I was like, okay, I kind of didn't get into it too much. But then once the goalie store board shut down, I was like, okay, I need a new outlet. So I was like, let me see, you know, this GGSU, what it's all about. And it wasn't, I mean, yes, look, we have characters, we're sarcastic, we give each other crap and all that stuff, but it was fine. There's nothing like what people were like, oh, it's worthless, don't go on there. I mean,
right.
I liked it. And it was an outlet for me to express, you know, my humor, which, you know, I like to make jokes and stuff like that, memes, all that stuff.
Yep.
And just that. And, you know, I don't have much of a life. I have a lot of free time. So I'm on there a lot, you know, just making jokes on everything, doing memes, like I said, all that stuff. And it just became more popular. And Stephen Schaefer, you know, who runs it, I guess he just saw like, oh, this guy's on all the time. Might as well make him an admin. So he's like, you want to just be an admin? You're on here enough anyway. I was like, yeah, sure, whatever. I'll do it. So, yeah, that's pretty much how I got involved with that.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny. I liken it to basically a locker room full of only goalies. It's like going to a goalie clinic and being in the locker room because we're going to pick on each other. You know, but what's funny is somebody will ask a question about equipment or something, and the first 25 comments are going to be the jokes, but then there's going to be the actual informative stuff. Like we get to it. We got to get it out of our system first. It's like everybody knows if they ask the question about how to cleaning a piece of equipment, it's going to start with the cat piss.
Yep.
But they know at some point somebody's actually also going to pipe in with useful suggestions.
Yeah.
You know,
you just got to put up with some of the BS, especially if you know you're asking an obvious question that's probably been asked 20 million times before. Like you're just gonna have to put up with some jokes, but you'll get what you want.
And you know what, I blame Facebook for that, because their search feature within groups isn't the most user-friendly.
If they made it a little
more user-friendly, but that would also probably take away from some of the fun.
I probably should decline more of these repetitive questions than I do, but then like you said, I kind of feel bad because I figure, you know, maybe they did search and they couldn't find it, but then I also figure, well, it's a chance we can have a little fun with this guy and, you know, like you do the jokes or whatever at first. Yeah. I approve most of them.
Yeah, I know I've submitted some stuff. I'm like, well, there's nothing wrong with this one. And if anything, it's going to get sarcastic remarks. So it's all good. You know, it's almost like the more absurd, the better.
Yeah, yeah. But it's definitely, I mean, it's definitely a great outlet for goalies to, you know, like you said, we love talking about it. We're, most of us are obsessed with it. So it's just a good outlet for that.
And it's not just beer league goalies in the group either. You know, there's some names in there. And that's, I think, the cool thing too, is it seems like, you know, we as goalies respect that and leave those people alone. It's not like we're hitting them up. And at least I haven't heard of anything that we're hitting them up in the DMs and, you know,
yeah,
annoying these people. It's just like, hey, every so often, you know, Kazmir Kaskasulo, there's a great example, you know, he's active. He'll say stuff and, you know, reply to comments. But there's others in there. Everybody's favorite member, Garrett Sparks, you know, still bouncing around. Yeah. So there's that. Now, you've also been part of the Legends camps too, haven't you?
Yeah. Geez, I started in 2017. So the 17, 18, 19, 20. Well, we didn't have one for COVID. 22, 23. So I've been to six. Yeah. Been to the last six that we've been able to have, I've been to.
Now, do you just attend them, or are you one of the organizers?
Mainly, I just attend. Schaefer pretty much organizes everything. But, I mean, if they need some help with something, I have no problem helping. But for the most part, I attend. You know, it's not a super serious camp at this point. It's, you know, for beer leaguers. It's not, if you're going to the GGSU camp, you don't have a future in playing goalie.
You know what, though? And I've talked to some goalie coaches. Like, we need more goalie camps or clinic options for goalies, because there really isn't an option for practice. We can go to, they call them stick and puck in the South. We called it shinny or pickup. In Chicago, we called it rat hockey. I still think that's the best term, is rat hockey, because you're all rink rats. You can go to that, but still you're just going to get breakaways and, you know, the regular beer league shots. So to have a beer league clinic is actually kind of awesome. I remember I was talking to Steve Carroll, goalie coach up in Minnesota, who he's goalie coach for the Division III national champion Gustavus Adolphus women's team last year. And I asked him, you know, have you ever considered having a beer league camp? And he's like, I have, but my insurance says no. And I was like, oh, okay, that's a good reason. But I've talked to some others. I'm like, you know, you get it out there, you're going to sell out quick. Because I look at me, I grew up in the 90s. I was idolizing Eddie Belfour. My game was more like, and it still is more like a Hasek meets Cujo. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's some modern, you know, techniques I could use some instruction on. You know, even just, I turn on some of the videos of these kids and they're never get off their knees or just sliding all around. I'm like, how the hell do they do that? Now, I know part of it is I'm still wearing skates with cowlings, and that's part of my problem. Okay. But I'm like, there's no way I can slide like that, you know, and I'm not going to use my 5 minutes of warm-up to figure it out either.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's where I think the camp is great. I know the one camp you guys got Eddie Belfour out there, and it sounded like he had a blast.
Yeah, that was the Tampa camp.
Yeah,
he came out there. I thought it was a long shot that he would come out, but he showed up, and you know, we had fun with him.
I got my Belfour whiskey in the cabinet.
There you go. Yeah.
I had him and Dane on the podcast early on, and they wound up sending me some of their stuff afterwards. But, you know, Eddie, it sounds like something that's right up his alley, having talked to him. He just loves talking goaltending. I forget who I was talking to at the Let's Play Hockey Expo, but they were trying to create almost like a GGSU type camp, but it was going to be in Vegas that included golf. And they're like, yeah, we've been talking to Grant Fuhrer. He loves the idea. He'll come out. He's like, he doesn't even have to come on the edge. He just wants to golf and talk goaltending, you know? So it's like, the idea is great, because there's those retired guys that would, you know, clearly come on out and be a part of it. And even if it's just for the stories, although I don't know if some of those guys we necessarily need to settle up to the bar afterwards with, they'll probably outdrink us, but that's a different discussion.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, no, the camps are definitely fun. Like I said, it's for a beer league. Like sometimes people post like, oh, I'm only a beer league goalie. Can I still go to the camps? Like, yeah, that's what's there. It's no pro. Mm-hmm. We're not pros here, guy. Like, but
no,
it's just more than anything. It's just fun. Hang out with the people you interact with on GGSU mm-hmm. in person and, you know, have a good time and learn a few things. And, you know,
yeah, it's the excuse we give to our spouses to go hang out with other goalies for a couple days.
Yeah.
You know, we have to have that ice time. We have to get those pictures to show that we didn't just get together and drink a few beers.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, you make relationships, make new friends, whatever, you know, like there's people that I've become pretty good friends with just from meeting them at the camp and whatnot. So.
Well, and that's what I love about hockey and just goalies is in because of social media, there's people I've connected with that I consider my friend. And we've never met in person, or I've met once, you know, I came back game. I've met him once, but anytime I, you know, send him a text or anything, it's like, boom. Yeah. We're right there. Bonesy down in or up mm-hmm. now up in Nashville, you know, same thing. We almost moved to Nashville and I'm texting him. What do you know about this area in the school district? You know, how far is it from the rink from this area? And, you know, he's answering all these, he didn't have to do it, but yeah. He's like, yeah, you're my buddy. And that's the great thing about goalies. It's like, yeah, you know, we've all been hitting the head enough. We know we all need help. So somebody's asking, we're there for it. Now I have to ask this because I know you're a goalie. I know the Miami Heat behind you. Okay. You know, you said you started with basketball, but what about the Denver Broncos instead of the Miami Dolphins?
So when I was very young, before I was really into any sports at all, I had some relatives living in Denver and we took a trip over there and they were big Broncos fans. And like I said, at the time I really wasn't too into sports and I didn't really have like favorite teams, but their passion for the Broncos while I was there and we were watching some games on TV, whatever, just got me into it. It's just one of those things, like something like that happens. And yeah, like everything else is Florida teams that are my favorite teams, but yeah. Football, it's the Broncos only because of that happenstance, you know.
Well, they had Elway. I mean, right. Again, another great thing about
the 90s. He's my like, all-time sports idol, John Elway, yeah.
We look at the 90s, and, you know, you had some phenomenal quarterbacks, Elway, Montana, Marino. Dan Marino. Brett Favre was, you know, toward the end of the 90s there. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just some of the all-time greats played in that time. And, you know, yeah, Tom Brady's going to, at least right now, considered the GOAT, but it's like, I wonder how well he would have been playing in the 90s in a game that was a little more open. You know, they didn't care about CTE back then.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I feel like you can't really, you have to compare people within their own generations. It's so hard.
Yep.
Different eras, different times, because it's so different. And it's the same thing with goalies. People try to compare goalies today to goalies in the 80s or whatever. It's just a completely different game. It's not the goalies in the 80s fault. They're working with what they had and what they were taught and whatever. And it's just,
it was a different game. It was a different system, different equipment. I actually had that conversation with Grant because one of my high school teammates in our team group chat, he blew it up the one day. He's like, hot take, Gretzky isn't as good as people think. Goalies just sucked in the 90s. Look at the scores. And it's like, whoa, dude, back up. Different game. It was the run and gun. Nobody was playing defense. Goalies were fair game to begin with if they came out of the crease. Mm-hmm. Equipment was half the size, you know, so we're going all about it. And I asked Grant and he's like, yeah, it was a completely different. He's like, they were still playing wooden sticks, but you factor in all these other things. And, you know, then we got on the discussion of, and he and I both agree, a goalie in the 90s would thrive in today's game because they had the athletic ability. But the way kids are taught today, more of the blocking and not the athletic, I wonder how many of them would thrive in the 90s style. I'm not saying they couldn't be good if they came up in it, but I'm saying I wonder, like, I think bring out Marty McFly and Doc's time machine, take a goalie from the 90s, bring him to today, he's going to do all right. But I think if you take one of those goalies that learns today's game and take them back into the 80s or 90s, he's going to struggle.
Well, we also just didn't have the equipment back then to play like how they would want to play anyway. So they couldn't even play how they wanted to. I mean, the quote unquote slide, there wasn't sliding surface on the pad.
No.
It was like a nylon or whatever that bunched up with the snow, and it almost caused you to not slide.
I used actual brown leather pads when I first started. There was no sliding, and they got heavier as the game went on.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, so that's why it's not, you know, you can't fault the goalies at that time. Like I said, it's what they were taught. It's the equipment they had. So it's like you can say you have two different things be true. Like you say goaltending in general today is better because of the advancements, the equipment and all that stuff. But it's not that the older guys couldn't have thrived in today's game had they had the same training, the same equipment. It's just different eras. So that's why I say it's really hard. I don't like to compare goalies from different eras like that. It's just too different of a game. It's too difficult to do that.
Well, that's what I love about Flower, because he's kind of one of those 90s goalies. He's kind of that cusp of the bridge between the generations. And so many kids are, how does he do that? And it's like he doesn't give up on pucks. You know, rely on the blocking. We were taught like never give up on a play.
It's funny that you say that about him now, because I remember when he was a rookie, he was actually like on the cutting edge of technique then, because he was the first guy we saw that was just sliding all over on his knees. Like I had never, at that point, I had never seen anyone do that.
Yeah, I didn't like him very much at that point. I was like, who is this kid with these yellow pads? And, you know, yeah, but he still had that 90s mentality, I'll say. Still does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's not afraid to just do whatever it takes to stop the puck.
Yeah, it helps that he's got good personality. Give him a year or two, maybe he'll be coming down to those legend camps as a instructor.
Yeah, we'd love to have him. That would be awesome.
Yeah, he's a treat for the game. Another guy like that I didn't appreciate until later in his career was Roberto Luongo. And I think it was because we only ever saw him on the ice. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until later in Vancouver that you started to see his personality.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was, because of his height and everything, he didn't have to move around the way Fleury does because he's shorter. You know, mm-hmm. there's certain teams that would never draft Fleury today just because of his height, which is ridiculous. Yeah. But Luongo, he was that tall guy. He was that smooth, technical guy, and throw on the Italian name, the slicked back hair. Is like, yeah, he looked like the villain from the movie. There's a reason not to like him. And then being a Blackhawks fan and then beating Vancouver is like, no, I can't stand this guy. But then then we got the social media, he started coming out a little bit more, at least on the team's platforms, and showing more of his personality. I'm like, oh my god, this guy is a treasure. We need more of them. And, good for him. He's like, no, I'm retired now. I'm going to stay out of the spotlight. I was like, God, we could totally use more of them.
Yeah, no, he's a great guy. And I mean, obviously I saw most of his career in Florida. He kind of started his career with us. And back then we were terrible. I remember, I think it was like the 2004 season where he like set a record, I think, with total saves. And he was just pelted with shots. And I mean, you could see he was an amazing goalie. He was just stuck on a crappy team, which was a shame. So, I mean, look, I hated the trade. I mean, that was one of the worst trades that we did to trade him away. But I'm happy that he got to enjoy some success he probably wouldn't have had if he stayed here with the Canucks. You know,
imagine if New York doesn't take, because Luongo was the number one pick. And then a year later, they take DiPietro at the number one pick. It's like, how did that work out for you guys? I think a lot of people are surprised when they realize that that's where Luongo started his career, because he spent such little time there that they don't even, doesn't even register that he was an Islander.
Yeah.
He was a treasure. I remember going to a game at the United Center in Chicago, and I got to sit behind him. I said this a couple times on the podcast, there were three home games in a row I went to. I sat behind Patrick Waugh, Grant Fuhr, and Roberto Luongo, three Hall of Famers. And I was like eight rows up, and I'm just sitting there the whole time watching. But what I remember most from that game is Mike Keenan was the coach at the time, and there was a call he did not like. and he threw about 8 or 9 sticks on the ice at the referees and somehow did not get thrown out of the game. He got a bench minor for delay a game, but he did not get thrown out of the game. And like, everybody's just looking around like, how is he still on the bench? Like, but at the same time, we're not even mad because that's just Mike Keenan being Mike Keenan. Yeah. You know? But yeah, that was my one game sitting behind Luongo. And, you know, the whole time I'm watching his feet. I'm watching his positioning. I'm watching, you know, where does he have his hands? Because he was kind of one of those, when we were coming up, it was the Eddie Belfort, you know, hands high like this. But he was kind of one of the first that was putting them down a little bit lower, you know, a little bit. He's obviously wasn't the first, because I would say Waugh and Brodeur were kind of the first and kind of really getting them down that Quebec style. But Luongo, I think more so because of his height, it was like, oh, I don't need to keep him up here. The net's down here.
Yeah.
We know hockey games move fast, but with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, you can score faster than anything happening on the ice. This week, new customers can bet $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. As a Hawks fan with Connor Bedard still on the shelf with his fractured jaw, I would not be hitting the over on any Hawks game right now. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app with code THPN. New customers bet just $5 on the NHL and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook with code THPN. The crown is yours. Have a gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available. For problem gambling, call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus, average varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario, bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/hockey for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. NHL and the NHL Shield are registered trademarks of the National Hockey League. Copyright NHL 2024, all rights reserved.
Thanks, right? Like he, look, I think it's pretty obvious you watch him. He doesn't have like Vasilevsky athleticism. That just wasn't his game. I mean, a lot of times if there was a scramble, he would end up on his stomach or his butt. That's just the way he was. So he played to his strengths, which was his size and positioning. And
you know, had a whole good career. I remember my goalie coach as a kid. You know, he listed off all the goalies of the time, the Belfours, the Hotvins, the Hoshiks, the Cujos. He's like, I don't want to see any of you trying to play like them, because there's things they do that are absolutely wrong, but they can get away with it because they're the best in the world. And then he looks at us, he goes, you guys aren't even the best in your house league team. So don't even try it. And we're like, okay. He's like, you got to learn the fundamentals first, and then you can develop your own style. But there's so much truth to that, you know, and but at the same time, I think that's a trouble some young goalies fall into, is they go to these goalie schools and they become goalie school machines, where it's like, this is the only way to do it. And I know on In Goal, they talk about where, you know, you go from team to team, you have different goalie coaches, and you take those different pieces and you create your own style. You do what works for you.
Yeah. And I mean, I've done a little coaching myself, and I think one of the most important things a coach needs to be is like open to things. Like, I don't think it's good to try to push everybody to do the, like you're saying, do the same thing. Cause you know, sometimes it's just not going to work for them. And sometimes somebody's going to do something that's a little unorthodox, but it's just going to work for them, whatever. You know, I think as a coach, it's our job to show them the options, you know, like for instance, what's a hot topic, RVH, right? That's the hot topic.
Yeah.
So show them VH, RVH, show them, hey, you can just stand here.
I was going to say the old school.
You can do the overlap. And you know what? Whatever works for you, as long, look, the proof is in the pudding. Are you getting scored on or not? If you're not getting scored on, I don't care if you lay on your back and have your feet in the air. I mean, if they're not scoring, they're not scoring. So
I'm laughing because after my first college start, we're in the locker room. My one teammate, Rosie, goes, "Hey, remember that save when you were laying on your back and both legs were in the air?" They go, "Yeah." He goes, "That was freaking awesome. But never do that again. I had a heart attack." I was like, "Stop the puck, didn't I?" You talk RVH and, you know, the old school stand up, hug the post. And I, you know, going back to KBG, you know, we were having the discussion about it. I was like, nobody's going to score the Michigan on me because that's how I cover my post. I hug that. I got to feel it right here. And I have, you know, the glove or the blocker. And, you know, that's the way I was taught. And it works for me. I'm not saying the RVH doesn't work, but it doesn't work for me because I can't slide like the way kids do today.
Yeah, and you know what I find kind of funny about the whole RVH thing is, like, I don't know, people act like it's a new thing, but it's really not. We just didn't call it RVH, but, like, you can find videos and pictures from the 90s of, like, Pop, Vin, and Velfer doing a paddle down by the post. It's an RVH if you look at the position they're in.
Oh,
it's
absolutely. Just
they only did it, like, literally on wraparounds or stuff attempts, whereas now the problem is goalies get into trouble because they're doing it when the puck is way in the corner and not around the net.
But
the move itself is not necessarily new is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, it's knowing when to use it and when not to use it. Yeah. I think that's the problem with so many young goalies now is they don't know. I was watching the Minnesota Boys High School State Tournament, and this was probably 3-4 years ago. I can't remember what team it was, a single A team. They didn't win the game. I'll start with that. But as soon as they crossed the blue line, this kid was down on his knees, just kind of moving post to post in the RVH. And I'm like, that's – the shot's coming from the point, buddy. What are you down on your feet, first of all, for? You know, the RVH is for when they're, you know, within a stick length. They can't get it up over your shoulder. But I'm like, oh, geez, you've gotten some bad advice or you don't care. I think it's the latter because you're down in an RVH for a shot from the point.
Well, and I mean, another reason I think it's important to know and be able to do different moves, like in that case, is like, so for instance, Martin Brodeur is my all-time favorite goalie. He's my idol when it comes to goaltending. And like, one of the things he was well known for is, like, he wouldn't show you the same move twice. Like, some guys coming down with the same type of shot, he'll do two different type of saves on it. So it's like, for me, when I play, like, sometimes I'll hug the post old school stand-up style, sometimes I'll do RVH, sometimes I'll do overlap, sometimes I do VH. I don't even necessarily do the same thing every time. Like, sometimes I'll just read the situation or whatever. And, you know, so it's not even like you have to do RVH all the time or you have to stand up all the time. I mean, it's about reading, you know, reading the play. It's reading the play is so important. And that's probably what a lot of these young kids don't do as good these days. They're like goalie school goalies where they just do they know the routine of the drill or whatever. It's like you're saying, as soon as the puck's there, I'm going to do this. But then it's like they don't maybe necessarily have the real world experience of playing in the game in those situations and seeing, well, what can I do differently? What can I get away with? What can I do in each situation? That kind of stuff. So,
that's a great point. And from a coaching standpoint, you know, I remember in college and most times in high school, even if it was only for 5 minutes, we would end practices with some kind of scrimmage. Was it 3-on-3 up cross ice? Was it 3-on-3 between the blue line? Was it full ice 5-on-5? But it was creating those non-predictable movements for all of us. And there's so much value. You know, you talk to some of the greats and they've said, I know Gretzky's talked about it, you know, just unstructured play, pond hockey, you know, just going out there and not having somebody telling you what to do is where you develop some of your best skills and knowledge. And I was talking to one of my teammates on my new team down here. And he's like, you know, you track the puck better than any goalie I've seen down here. I'm like, I don't think my puck tracking is that great. I'm following the play. That's all I'm doing. Mm-hmm. You know, he's like, yeah, but like your ability to see on a 2-on-1, like there's times where, you know, he's not going to pass. I'm like, because I see where my defenseman is. There's not a passing lane. You know, it's, I think that's where some people confuse tracking for reading a play. It's just knowing what's available or knowing that this guy's going to pass. So I better get over there quick because I'm getting old and slow.
Yeah. Like, and one thing that, like, if I ever coach or something I see that I don't like is, like, when you're doing a drill and there's no variation to it, like, the goalie knows exactly, okay, you pass it there, he's going to shoot, and it's going to be the same thing every time. Like, is that, I mean, yeah, you're working on your movement, I guess, a little bit, but if you know it's such a controlled thing, you're not going to be able to take that into a game because the game is nowhere near that controlled. Like, I always like drills where there's maybe some kind of option where the goalie can't necessarily just assume, okay, I know for a fact, because you can almost cheat the play at that point. You know exactly where the shot's
going. Oh, and you whatever. See it all the time.
Yeah, and, like, especially now with, you know, social media, with the TikToks and the Instagrams and a lot of these account, like, coaching accounts, you know, they, of course, they're not going to want to show their goalie getting scored on. And they just want to show, like, this flashy thing to make the goalie look good. So you see the goalies, they move amazing, but it's a very controlled drill. They know exactly what it, you know, where the puck's going, where the shot's coming from.
Yep. Yeah. No, I can't remember who it was that, you know, really instilled in me is, like, even though you know what's going to happen on each one of these drills, you don't cheat. After each shot, you get set and, you know, you play it the way you would in a game. It's the old Michael Jordan practice, like, you play, you know. It might be repetitive, but if you do it right and repetitively, when it does happen in a game, it becomes easy. And I think that's where sometimes kids miss that opportunity on those repetitive drills. It's like, it's a pain to get up and get back on that post to start from the corner, but there's a reason we do it. Now, are the coaches necessarily drawing those drills up for us? Goalies? Absolutely not. In fact, they're probably not drawing up any drills in their practice for us. But if we execute each and every shot in the drill to our full potential, it's going to make us better regardless of we have a goalie coach or not.
Yep.
You know, so I want to be mindful of time. I end every episode with a list of 10 questions. I've asked the same questions to every single guest. And this is usually where things go off the rails and time really goes by us. But the first one is, what's the craziest coaching moment from your playing days? And since you didn't necessarily play youth hockey, you know, like some of my other guests, it doesn't necessarily have to be hockey. You know, it could have been, you know, if you played baseball or basketball when you were younger, where a coach just went full on Mike Keenan.
In hockey, I don't really remember that happening, but like I said, I played basketball, and my freshman year of high school, I was on the JV team, and we had kind of a fiery coach, and I don't, you know, at this point, the further we get from it, it's more cloudy, but, like, I don't know, I guess we weren't doing good, we were kind of losing halftime, and, like, he came in to the locker room and he starts off so soft spoken and just, so we were like, oh, he's not mad. He's like, okay, you good? And then just, he's like, but you guys have been sigh. And he, like, threw a water bottle across, and we were just like, what the heck? Like, he just went from 0 to 100 like that. And we're like, what the heck's going on here? And, like, some of the guys I'm still friends with today, like, will reference that, like, oh, remember that time? Like, he just went ape shit on us in the locker room. But yeah, that's about the only time. But for the most part, I haven't really had, like, crazy, crazy coaches like that. I mean, I've had pretty good coaches, you know, the instances that I've had coaches. So
can't really. Yeah, well, I can't say I've really played for any fiery coaches like that. But even the mild-mannered ones I've played for, there's still that one time. In fact, my coach freshman, sophomore year, he was going to school to finish up his degree to become a psychiatrist, which he is now. And we were in the state playoffs my freshman year, and he just lost it at the refs, you know, asking them, what the F are you doing? And he throws his clipboard, breaks over my buddy's head, and, like, just stomps away. And it's just, like, so unlike him, to the point that, you know, a couple of years ago, he was in town and I went to meet him and his family, and, you know, he now has kids of his own, and he's telling stories about me, and, you know, some of the times I just got lit up. It's like, hey boys, did your dad ever tell you the time he got thrown out of a hockey game and broke a clipboard over somebody's head? And, like, all three kids are like, excuse me, what? And because, you know, psychiatrists are like, dad, did you do a feelings inventory? Did you stop and ask yourself, why are you acting this way? And it's just like all of the, it was just so, but again, you know, even the mild-mannered coaches sometimes just get pushed too far. So the next question, what is your favorite all-time goalie mask?
It's got to be Beezer. I got to go with Beezer.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's a great one. And it's funny because I had Don Strauss on the podcast who made the Armadillo helmet and painted that one.
Right.
And his, Steve Shields of San Jose, he painted the original shark mask where, you know, had the mouth open. Mm-hmm. And so when he found out about Florida and was going to be painting a mask for Beezer because they had the relationship from New York, he wanted to do the same thing with Panther. So mm-hmm. he made one, and the Panther was realistic looking.
Oh, yeah. I heard about that already.
But and he's like, but then the team's like, well, we want it to be more team-centric. So he's like, all right, back to the drawing board. And he's like, mm-hmm. who would have thought that it would have become truly an iconic mask, you know, to the point where so many, even Panthers goalies have had some iteration of it.
Mm-hmm. And to me, like, yeah, it's just cool in and of itself, but like,
yeah,
it's probably the mask that incorporates the team's logo the best. I mean, it literally is just the team's logo. I mean,
yeah. Well, and there was something about that, because I've seen that design on other masks, but that Armadillo mask with that design, just it for some reason looks better on that mask itself.
Yeah.
And yeah, it is cool. So what is your favorite rink that you've played at?
Well, are we talking about like the condition of it or just like maybe the coolest memory or whatever?
It could be either. You know, I think a lot of some people have been like, well, the coolest place I've played at, you know, is usually an NHL rink. But there's usually that one rink where for whatever reason, sentimental or what, it's your favorite barn to play in.
Yeah. So, I mean, like I've done some skates at the Panthers Arena. It's actually warmer than you would think. Like,
I was TV lights.
I was pretty hot on the ice on there. I was like, oh, this is pretty warm for an ice rink.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I guess if you're going to go maybe more by like fond memories or whatever, if we go back, you had mentioned about the Savannah tournament that the college mm-hmm. teams do. So this was actually the first year FSU wasn't involved in that. But ever since I've been there, we had always gone to that, the Savannah tournament every year. That was always the highlight of our year. That was the big tournament. So we were playing. Now they have a new arena. Have you been to the new arena in Savannah?
I haven't. No, I haven't been to Savannah yet, but I know I'm going to spend some time there because my daughter wants to go to college.
Yeah, so it's really nice. It's really nice because last year we did an alumni event coinciding with the actual event when FSU was still doing it. And that was the first year they had that arena open. That's where the Ghost Pirates play now, their ECHL team. And it's mm-hmm. it's a really nice arena. I mean, you know, whatever. It's kind of small because it's only for an ECHL team, but it's very nice arena. But when I played at the tournaments there, it was all the old Savannah Civic Center. It was a very, it looked like 70s era building,
yeah.
You know, very outdated, whatever. So the building itself was kind of crap. But it was just cool because it was the most people we would play in front of all year at FSU. Because it was us, UF, Georgia Tech. And then, of course, so like we would always play one of the Georgia teams, and then we would play UF, which is our big rival, FSU UF. Yep. And one year we took it to a shootout, and we beat them in a shootout. I was the goalie in that, and so that's probably like the coolest moment at a fondest moment at a rink. Even to the point where, as you mentioned too before, how club guys have to buy, we have to buy our own equipment and everything. And I was just on like such a high skating off the ice after that shootout against our rival. Some kid is like, oh, can I have your stick? I was like, yeah, I gave him my stick. And then like a minute later in the locker room, sitting there like, man, now I got to buy another stick. Maybe I shouldn't have done that. But it was just cool because it was kind of like, you know, a taste of being like big time somewhat.
Yeah.
You know? So that's probably like my fondest memory at a rink.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned, you know, how hot it is, because a couple of my teammates skated at Gas South Arena this weekend, which is where the Atlanta Gladiators play in the ECHL. And they were talking about how hot it was. And it's like, yeah, so it's TV lights. Because remember when I was in high school, we played at Rosemont Horizon, Allstate Arena, where the Chicago Wolves play. And I played the second half of the game, and I'm just sitting on the bench, and I'm starting to sweat. And I'm like, Jesus. all of these lights, and it's like, yeah, they're ridiculous. And I played at Mariucci, where the Gophers play, University of Minnesota, and same thing, those lights. But I was at the Stadium Series last year in Raleigh, and it was a beautiful night. It was like 50 degrees, just gorgeous for hockey. And the football stadium was right next to PNC Arena. And, you know, we're sitting there with some people we knew and we're like, yeah, it's probably tough on these guys with how hot it is out here tonight. I was like, no, this is probably cooler out here than it is next door on a normal game. They're like, really? It's like, oh yeah, those TV lights, they make it pretty unbearable at times.
Yeah.
So what is your favorite stick that you've ever used?
The Kozak cut, obviously.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, that was definitely the most interesting stick I've ever used. No, favorite. I mean, I kind of don't want to just say the newest, but because of how light and durable it is, probably my Warrior V2 Pro Plus.
Yeah.
Just because it's so, you know, the technology now, it's so light. The composite sticks have come a long way. I was kind of a late adopter with the composite sticks. I was still using foam core for quite a while after composites had already come out.
I'm still using them.
You're still using the foam core? If I go back, because I still have an old one, and when I sometimes I pick it up, I'm like, man, this thing feels like a brick now. I'm so used to the composites. It's such a weight difference.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just, for me, the Warriors just felt so sturdy. I have no issue of it break. I mean, it's almost to the point where I want it to break. It's like it keeps lasting me so long that like I'll get a new set and now the stick doesn't match the new set anymore. I'm like,
yeah,
just break already so I can order new sticks.
Yeah. But,
yeah, I really like the Warrior V2 Pro Plus that I'm using right now.
I will say that my last two out of my last three sticks have been Warrior foam cores, and I like them for the same reason, that they're just so well balanced. Yeah. You know, they're my favorite stick of all time is the Cooper Bauer Reactor 5. And what I loved about that stick was the paddle wasn't necessarily football shape, but it was flat and then just kind of came to the edges. And I really liked it for control purposes. And I feel like the Warrior sticks, not quite there, but they still have more of that flat face for control. And that's why I like them. But I know my foam core days are probably going to come to an end here soon because they're just harder and harder to find.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I also want to, so that's the stick that is like the best overall, but I want to throw out like a nostalgic pick too for, now that you were kind of talking about the foam cores and some older sticks, I really love the Heat and Heat Light 4 stick, the Brodeur pattern with the little graphic on it. So if I had to go kind of like more of an old school stick, it would be that one, the Heat Light 4.
I know a lot of goalies that use that stick. Yeah. A couple of my goalie partners use that stick and swore by it. So what's your favorite, I'll call it a youth hockey memory, but I would say anything pre-beer league.
All right. So like I already kind of mentioned that the FSU one, but I'll go a little before that too. So when I was playing roller hockey and I was playing for my high school, we had one year that we did a tournament down here with all the high schools in the area. We do a tournament. And this was, I think, maybe the next year after the Panthers had made their Cinderella run. So we entered the tournament as like nobody. Like nobody thought we were going to do anything. There was other teams that were had, you know, really good players and people thought they were going to win whatever. And we had kind of our own little Cinderella run in this tournament. And unfortunately, much like the Panthers, we came up short in the championship game. But just the fact that we made it to the championship game, like, we shocked a lot of people. It was a really cool run. And, you know, it was with some good friends of mine that, you know, in high school, whatever, my high school buddies. So that was just a really cool, like, I guess you'd say youth moment for me, is the little Cinderella run we had at the regional tournament for all the high schools here.
So I have to ask this one, because we're the same age. In the 90s, we would have been middle schoolish. The NHL had a traveling street hockey tournament called NHL Breakout, and they had inflatable boards. Did you ever play in that?
I didn't, because wasn't that one though just on foot? I think it wasn't. Didn't it not involve skates? I think it was just like a floor hockey type of thing.
No, the one they had in Chicago was roller.
Okay,
and the goalies could be on foot. The goalie had the option.
Okay. So maybe that's what I'm thinking. I remember there's something involved where I saw people doing it on foot and I was just like not interested in
I think they had to, because I remember we played in it the first year and we kind of had that. It was literally a bunch of goalies entered a team and we chose the biggest, slowest one to play goalie and we all skated out and we wound up making it to the championship and lost. but we weren't too upset because it was like 98 degrees that day and we're playing on blacktop surface and we're like, we just need this to end so we can go home. But yeah, I think they, I could be very wrong, but I think they may have had a inline division and like a on foot division. They probably had a better term for it than on foot, but I think they did. I'm not sure. So the next one, this is going to be interesting. What's the best chirp you've heard on the ice, off the ice, in the GGSU forum, directed at you, not directed at you?
So
directed at Vogel, not directed at Vogel.
I don't know if this counts as a chirp because it was technically written on a like a signboard, whatever. But
yeah.
So again, back when I was playing at FSU, we were playing this school called Emory-Riddle. I don't know if you're familiar with
it. Yeah. So
we were in Daytona playing Emory-Riddle. And they, whenever we played them, they would always have their like fraternities come out to the game. So the crowds were kind of rowdy because it'd be the fraternity guys from the school there showing up. And I don't know why. So like you said, this still wasn't targeted at me, but I don't know why they decided to target this one guy on my team. I think they just kind of randomly looked at the roster and picked a guy. So there's this guy, his last name was Hobbs. So you know how hockey, we just call him Hobbs. They wrote on a signboard, trying to make this tame it for the show here. On the sign, they wrote in big letters, Hobbs' mom sucks, you know what? Now, the funny thing was his mother was sitting right behind them. Of course, they didn't know that. It just happened to be like a funny coincidence. And that's like, that's always stood out to me as a really hilarious thing. Cause it's like, what are the chances they picked him? They wrote that. And the mother is like right next to the sign. So we were all cracking up on the bench.
Did mom see the sign?
I don't know if she saw it. Cause she was kind of actually like to the side and behind them, but
okay. I'm sure she heard about it at some point afterwards.
Oh, I'm sure she heard about it at some point. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and my son wants to be an aerospace engineer. So it's a school we've looked at. Tech though is where he wants to go. But one thing I know about pilots, the ones I've met, is you don't want to try and outdrink one of them. They have a tolerance that is disconcerting considering they're flying airplanes. Speaking of which, what is the worst post-game beer?
Oh, well, I hate IPAs. So if it's anything IPA for me, I can't do that. For me, especially after a game, I mainly want water for one thing because I'm usually pretty dehydrated. But otherwise, it's just any light beer, really, something easier.
Yeah,
I don't want anything like too heavy after the game.
No, I'm with you, and I think Coors Light is almost like that perfect post game beer because it's darn near water to begin with. It's just got that little bit of crispness to it. That's a good one. So this is a very polarizing question. When you tape your stick, do you go heel to toe or toe to heel?
I do heel to toe.
Okay, you are in the vast majority of normal goaltenders.
Now, but I do have a specific reason, and I don't remember if I used to do it the other way before I changed up my tape job. But so the main reason I do it, I used to, back in the 90s, whatever, when I started, I used to only tape like a section of the blade, not like the full blade to the toe.
Okay.
But then, I don't know, maybe not even that long ago, maybe 8 years ago or so, I saw more and more goalies doing it all the way to the toe. And to me, it's easier to start at the heel, end at the toe, and then you make like the end piece there. So that's why I do it that way now. I don't remember back when I was only doing the little section, I might have started at the toe and went the other way. But
now when you say only the little section, did you just like do the heel and leave most of the blade open? Or was it like the 90s goalies where you left about, you know, an inch or two of the toe?
Yeah, so, yeah. That's basically what it was.
Okay.
Like the classic 90s one where, you leave a couple inches at the toe and then you ended up at the heel, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. And back then we had to tape up the heel because they were wood sticks and they were sponges where now you see goalies and kids, they don't even tape the heel.
Yeah.
For me, it's going to be old habits die hard. So what's your favorite number to wear and why?
It's going to be 30 again, because Brodeur.
Yeah.
That, or I'll go with one for Luongo too, but mostly if I can get 30, I'll get 30. That
was my first number because of Eddie. So that's one of mine. It's funny because I never liked one because I felt like I didn't have anything on my back. But that was back when jerseys, you know, the numbers were patches. And now that everything's, so, you know, just part of the printing, it doesn't really matter anymore. The team I'm skating with now, they ordered jerseys before I was on the team. So they just ordered number one for the goalie. I'm like, all right, fine. It's the goalie cut. It fits. So, you know, as long as I have a jersey, I really don't care at the end of the day. So the last question, and it's my favorite one. What advice do you have for young goaltenders?
Really just have fun and enjoy yourself. I feel like so many kids get caught up in the competitiveness of it and worrying about how do I get to the next level or think, you know, like you're already thinking about like trying to go pro or something at a young age. Like just have fun, man. It's like, sometimes like the parents get too involved and it just gets too serious and it sucks the fun out of it. You know, and it's like, some kids are going to get burned out and just quit playing because they just, it's not fun anymore. So I think first and foremost, you got to have fun. And of course, you got to try hard and do all that stuff, but you just got to enjoy it. That's the main thing. Cause let's face it. What is it? 99% or whatever are not going to be going pro. So, I mean, yes, it's good to have dreams or whatever, but realistically you're probably not going pro. So enjoy yourself, man. You know, and it's like, I remember there was a couple of situations when I was playing real competitive inline hockey where I had these situations where like, oh, I could play with this better known higher level team, but I'm not really friends with anybody there. Or I could play with this other team that's not as good, but they're all my friends. And I always chose my friends because I knew I wasn't going to go pro anything. So it's like, what's the point? I'd rather play with my friends. So I think it just a lot of times it gets taken too seriously and kids just need to have more fun with it mainly.
Well, and to that point, even in the beer leagues, it's kind of the same way, you know, just have fun because the team I was on in Minnesota before we moved, I could have played up in higher divisions, won more games, but I liked that group of guys. Were we good? Some nights we were good, but not most nights. But that didn't matter. It was just, it was a fun group and, you know, that's have fun and like the people you're playing hockey with. That's gonna make the biggest difference. You know, the wins, by the time you make the beer leagues, you don't remember hardly any of the wins and losses. You remember a few of them, the big ones, but that's it. You remember the practices in locker room more. Mm-hmm. So you know, if you like who you're playing with, that makes a huge difference. So well, Luis, I appreciate you taking time to chat with me. And
yeah, no problem, happy to be on.
Yeah, I'll have to post the link to this in the GGSU group so that they can drop all their fun comments about us.
They're going to be disappointed I had my shirt on. I know I'm going to get a comment about that. You should have had your shirt off.
Yeah, well, if it makes you feel any better, I have been in communication with Schaefer to get him on once he gets back from vacation. You know, he took all that raffle money or waffle money and went to Aruba.
Okay.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, disclaimer, I don't think it was the raffle money he used to get there, but that's what we're going to say that just for, you know, but for legal purposes, I feel like I should say, I don't believe it, but, well, again, thank you. And we'll keep in touch.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. Always happy to be on.
Thanks again to Luis for his time. Despite what others say on GGSU, he isn't that bad. We'll see what Schaefer has to say when I get him on. Be sure to follow Luis's YouTube page, The Thin Red Line. I've included a link to the show in the show notes. You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube simply by searching for Wash Up Goalie and I'll pop up. Visit washupgoalie.com for some great hockey-related content, my Beer League hockey video highlights, and of course, all podcast episodes. If you want some Wash Up Goalie or Tendy Talk apparel, be sure to visit my Threadless shop by clicking the merchandise link on my website. If you like this podcast, go listen to the BLPA Big Show. It's the OG BLPA podcast network show where a couple of Beer League players talk Beer League hockey, draft experience shenanigans, and exploits from around the game. Be sure to check out the full lineup of hockey-related podcasts on the Hockey Podcast Network as well. There are too many shows to list here, but shows like the King's Realm Podcast, the Habs Nightly Podcast, and the Canadians Connection Podcast can all be found there.
I need to thank the band Zambonis for allowing me to use their music on my episodes. You can download their music on iTunes or listen wherever you stream music from. I'm working on lining up other goalies to talk to. If you are a goalie or have connections to a goalie who I should talk to, shoot me an email at washupgoalie39@gmail.com or send me a DM on social media. Let's not forget, if you're a brand that wants to sponsor the show, be sure to reach out and I'd be happy to talk. And finally, if you like what you hear, be sure to subscribe, rate, and comment on the podcast platform you're listening on. It's a quick action on your part that helps others find Tendy Talk. Until next time, keep your stick on the ice and your body square to the puck.
Good news?
Well, Dave, the pond?